Welcome back to Chat with a Cat. This is episode 32. This is season 7. We're doing this after sim number 9. We did the Western Conference breakdown in episode 31 after sim number 8. So now we're going to give the treatment to the Eastern Conference. And part of the reason I delayed giving the breakdown treatment to the Eastern Conference is there's a lot less drama in the East than there is in the West. It's the Bucks Conference yet again. Feels like it's been the Bucks Conference to lose pretty much since the first season of the league. And so we're just going to kind of go through the conference and take a look at things. We'll start with the Bucks. And I do think one of the comments I will make about the Bucks is it does seem like the Lakers decided that in team building it would be a good idea to try to take a page out of the Bucks playbook. The Bucks have been dominant, A, because of Kevin McHale, who's been super efficient, but B, because they have been absolutely destroying teams on the inside, especially defensively. They've led the league by a country mile in blocked shots the last few years. And again, this season, you've got Bonoy Benjamin averaging 3.5 block shots. You've got Kevin McHale averaging 3.4. Terry Tyler, their small forward, 1.7. Jim Peterson, 1.8. Nymphius, 1.2. So they've got a lot of guys that clog up the middle, which means they take away the easy shots and makes it such that it's extraordinarily difficult for teams to score on the inside against them. And as we all know, shooting inside has a much higher success rate than shooting from the outside. And so the Bucks have just used this monster defense to choke things off and slow things down. And I think the question on everybody's mind is this coming to an end anytime soon? The good news is it depends on how you define soon. Terry Tyler is 30. He's been a key piece of the Bucks for pretty much since the beginning. Kevin McHale is 29. He's been their anchor since he was acquired in season 2. And Nymphius is also 29. So their clutch of bigs, with the exception of Bonoy Benjamin, is starting to hit the point where we can expect to see decline out of them. The problem, such as it is that these bigs are surrounded by a bunch of young athletic guards that are just getting better. You've got Doc Rivers, who's 25, Hornacek's 23, Danny Young is 24. And so the Bucks are well positioned, and they've also been traditionally very good at being able to convert stars into other stars. The Bucks are not a team that sells pieces and rebuilds. They're not going to generally trade out for anything other than premium, you know, top five draft picks. They're going to try to continue to keep their run of stars going. And so it will be interesting to see how long Doug is able to keep things going. Obviously, the Bucks are a little bit over the salary cap this season, but going into next season, it looks like they're going to be comfortable. The only thing that I would be worried about if I was the Bucks is Doc Rivers is coming up for RFA. Somebody is going to pay Doc. He's a purple potential player. He's going to get a max deal. And that may mean that they're going to have to lose Purvis Short, who's been giving them some of their offensive punch. Although if I know Doug, I will bet that he's able to find a way to move Peter Verhoeven and his incredibly large contract, despite the fact that Verhoeven is only averaging about 23 minutes a game for the Bucks. So he's being paid like a star, and he's playing like a bench player. So, again, if I were to look at the Bucks, traditionally they've done a very astute job of assessing talent and paying players properly. I think Terry Tyler's contract toward the end might get excessive just due to his age, but if you overpay on year 5 for 4 years of high-level productivity, I think that's something you're probably willing to do. But this is, this is the season where I'm not going to say the Bucks are going to fall apart, but this is the off-season where you might be able to pluck a piece or two away from them. Again, probably not Doc Rivers. That seems to be, you know, the guy that he loves, although you can force him to pay premium money for that, and maybe that enables you to go and poach Purvis Short on the back end of unrestricted free agency. We'll see how teams choose to play that. But by and large, I like where the Bucks are, with the possible exception of they might be into luxury tax territory next season, and they've got a point satchel that will probably be able to pay that for a couple of seasons. And knowing Doug, again, he's always able to pivot off of players and get things done pretty easily. So I'm not worried that he's going to find himself stuck with players he doesn't want. Next up is the Knicks. And there's a big jump between the Knicks and the Bucks. Unlike the West, where you've got the Lakers and the Spurs kind of battling it out to the wire for the number one overall seed, it's pretty obvious where things are going in the East. The Knicks, the gap between the Knicks and the Bucks is about the same as the gap between the Lakers and the Warriors in the West. And so it's a pretty big step. The Knicks have done a good job, I think, of building around Moses Malone. The introduction of Buck Williams to Moses in the offseason made for a very strong front court. And then Bernard King's scoring is exceptional. Even Johnny Moore, I think he's an underrated point guard. I need that underrated sound drop. And I do like the pickup of Jeff Lamp earlier in the season, mostly because Lamp is on an extremely team-friendly contract. So you get one of your starters taken care of for the next couple of years at a deal that looks roughly like a rookie-scale contract. And so that is going to be super helpful. The only free agent of note that they're looking at coming up is Johnny Moore. I think they'll be able to bring him back, fit him under the cap. And so the Knicks are primed to be well-positioned to repeat their performance from this year, last year. But, and the but here is age. Moses is 32, so he is in decline. Buck Williams is 27. He's entering his prime. Bernard King is 30. He's going to decline a little bit. Jeff Lamp is 28. Might take a slight hit to athleticism, but he's not likely to get worse. Johnny Moore, 29, not likely to get worse. So all of their guys are in their primes now, except for Moses, who's just coming out of his prime. And the Knicks are well positioned from a salary standpoint to be able to keep this team together. The key question to me is, how long do the Knicks want to keep this squad together? And when do they feel it's useful to hit the restart button? And one of the things that I notice as I take a look at their salaries is, if you assume that they're going to decline Moses Malone's option in 1988, they'll probably also decline Mitchell Anderson's option, Don Collins' option. They are set up, assuming they get Johnny Moore, let's say, on a 1+1 with a team option in free agency, to do a complete hard reset in 1988 around Buck Williams. And so I really think that the Knicks are going to push hard in 86 in the playoffs. If they don't perform to the level they'd like to, I think they'll be willing to take on short-term deals in 1987. 1988 is, I think, when they're going to have to pivot. And do I think they're totally going to blow up in 88? I don't. And that's simply because they don't own their own draft pick in the 1989 draft. I think they will try to hold things together with a lot of short-term deals until then, and then go into a hard, hard reset. But the Knicks are a team whose window is open but closing, and they're having the ill fortune of having to face off against a complete powerhouse in the Bucks. And so what they're going to have to hope is that Moses Malone goes full Moses Malone and just carries, and Buck Williams is able to do something to help offset the matchup against Kevin McHale. And Bernard King is another guy that could go nuclear. So they got two guys that on any given night could drop 50. You got Moses Malone, you got Bernard King. And Will either of those players be able to carry them to glory and carry them to victory over the Bucks? I don't know. But they've got some of the guys that have a chance to do it, so I would give them a puncher's chance. The other team that is kind of on their level but is not going to win their division because they're in the same division as the Bucks is the Pistons. And the Pistons have done a very good job of acquiring a team that I think is a nice mix of youth and veterans. It's a nice blend of depth. They acquired Larry Nance in the offseason, who's 28, to pair with Kevin Willis up front, who's 24. Their small forward is Terry Cummings. He's 26, still about to enter his prime. Alvin Robertson's playing shooting guard, 24, about to enter his prime. Rob Williams is their point guard. He's 25, about to enter his prime. Their backups are Sparrow, 28, Henderson, 31, Wiggins, 27, Regan, 31, Rollins, 31. So their starters are not quite to their primes. Their backups are in their prime or just exiting their prime. So this is a team that I think is a little better set up for longer term success than the Knicks. I think the Knicks have about a 2-year window. I would say the Pistons, as presently constituted, have maybe a 5-year window if they want to go that far. That would take them through the end of the Terry Cummings contract. And the other thing, as I look at them, is they don't have any really excessive salaries, and they're not going to have to worry too much about salary probably until 1988 when Kevin Willis needs to be re-upped. Although at that point they have Robert Reed falling off the books, but they'll have to re-up both Kevin Willis and Alvin Robertson. That's going to be expensive. We'll see if they cut loose Gerald Henderson or Rory Sparrow at that time. But I think, again, the Pistons are well positioned to compete for quite some time. They might have to break up a little bit of their depth, but I think they'll be able to work with all of their starters. And a lot of that comes from having Rob Williams on a contract that's actually not so bad long term. I'm sure they would love to find a way to get another value signing in there, but not sure if that's going to happen. After those two, you take a step down into the group of squads that are fighting for 4th, 5th, 6th, 7th, even 8th place. And we're going to start with the Cavaliers. Everybody has kind of kicked dirt on the grave of J.L. Marines as he kind of had a period where he was busy. And yet, even on cruise control and even with some injuries, he was able to stay the course and have a nice over 500 record. He's steering in for right now the 4 seed. Again, this is a team that has been steady and has been together for a while. The Mahorn, Paxson, Moncrief, Troika are 28, 29, and 29. They've put a ton of time in together. He knows how to use them. The one concern that I have, such that it is that Michael Adams is a little undersized at point guard, and John Paxson, I don't think, has ever grown into the point guard that they would hope. And Del Curry has not been the shooting and scoring threat that I think they hoped for when they picked him. He's only averaging 4.5 points a game. And so it's a team that's very, very dependent on its starters, which means it's very, very susceptible to injuries. And we've seen in the past, injuries have jumped up to bite teams in the playoffs. And so I'm not suggesting that you need 10 players worth of depth. But when your team is so dependent on all 5 starters, it does expose you to potential issues if you have one injury. Moncrief and Paxson are both having very good seasons again. The thing that I would be concerned if I was J.L. Marines is how long can they keep it up? This is a team that's on the same timeline roughly as the Knicks and the Bucks, but they're also significantly worse than either of those teams, and there's not a lot of prospects for getting better quicker. They don't have a ton of cap space until 1988, but that's also the year that Jim Paxson comes free, so they're going to have to re-sign him. Rick Mahorn comes free, so they're going to have to re-sign him. John Paxson is up for RFA this year. He's probably going to get something of a pay bump. He's by no means a max player, but he's going to be making more than $100,000. So Yes, they not only have cap space in 88, but if they still want to retain their players, they may not have as much cap space as they'd like. And so I think for that reason, the Cavaliers are at a crossroads where they need to decide that they're going all in. And at that point, you probably have to jettison some of your younger talent with higher potential to get help now and some of your draft picks. Or they decide that they're going to go for the future. They're going to cede the titles for the next couple of years in the East to the likes of the Knicks and the Pistons and the Bucks, and get something for Paxson and Moncrief and Mahorn while they still can. As we've seen with Robert Parrish, players that are in demand very, very quickly come out of demand as cap space dries up and as they hit the magical age of 30, which all of these guys, well, not Mahorn, but both Paxson and Moncrief are scheduled to do this season. And it's funny how, you know, we just see that number in the front of the age click from 2 to 3, and all of a sudden nobody wants your guy no matter how productive he is. So they may be stuck with this core if they don't make a move in the offseason. And given the Cavaliers' past history and their reluctance to change a core that has had some success, I don't see that coming. So I think what I would expect out of the Cavaliers this offseason is to use the cap space jump when the cap increases to try to get some more pieces around their core. The question as to whether or not they are able to afford that is an open question. And if that fails, then what do they pivot to? I still think, if I'm the Cavaliers, that there's not right now great value going out there for stars. So I probably try to add something around my current core and see if I can make the jump up. But I also have to be mindful that the Bucks are a very dominant team, and until they get rid of a couple of players without getting stars back, they're going to remain the dominant team, and you're going to have a very difficult time getting past them. Next up is Angry Bananas Celtics squad. This is a squad that has changed drastically over the past couple of seasons. They did add Lewis Lloyd coming over from the Bucks. I'm not 100% certain that Lloyd was the key player for the Bucks. I really thought Tyler and his exceptional blocking and stealing ratings, along with his rebounding, was what made the Bucks as effective as they were. I thought Lewis Lloyd was an ancillary piece. They've got a lot of potential in Hakeem, Dominique, and Terry Porter. So this is a team that is on the rise. The thing that I find interesting is that in most of my analysis, Hakeem is probably a top five player in the league. I'm not sure that Dominique is, simply because Hakeem plays both sides of the ball. Dominique does not. And I have to wonder if the Celtics were to lean in to the defensive identity that you would think someone like Olajuwon would provide them, with a 92 post defense and a 100 block rating and a 60 steals rating, which is extremely high for a big man. Could they turn into the next incarnation of the Bucks? The thing with Lewis Lloyd is he's not a terrific defender. He's a C-plus, B-minus defender. Dominique is a C-plus, B-minus defender. Kyle Macy, who's their shooting guard, is a B defender, but not incredibly terrific offensively. And, of course, Terry Porter is a great steals guy, but still probably a B defender on the perimeter. And what I think they really ought to do is look at, can we make an upgrade for Macy or Lloyd with a true defender? You're going to have all the scoring you need between Dominique and Hakeem, and try to lock down that side of the ball. If you take a look at their current defense, they're fourth in the league with a 460 opponent field goal percentage. I think they can do better. I think if they are able to hold down teams, and given that the Bucks have accumulated everything in the middle, Maybe they focus on replacing Macy on the perimeter. I think Michael Cooper is probably too old, so you don't look to Coop, but somebody like a Michael Cooper might be a great fit in Boston, although, again, they'll probably want someone a little bit younger. Also, Lewis, Lloyd, and Macy are 28 and 29. They don't fit in with the 24-year-old timeline of Hakeem and 23-year-old Terry Porter. Neek's 27, which I think is fine. He's going to be in his prime for several more years. But it just feels like the Celtics are one or two pieces away from having an identity. And I don't know with the Lewis Lloyd and Danny Shea's contracts if they're going to be able to pivot to do the kinds of things they'd like to do. I think they're going to be active in the free agent market. I would expect the cap to jump to the point where they'll probably have a max contract to hang out or to hand out, rather. And so there will be guys that they are trying to convince to come to Boston. Can they close the deal? I don't know. They probably like to make some offers in restricted free agency and hope people don't match. But again, I think the biggest position of need here is definitely at shooting guard. And I'm not sure that there's a lot of, let's say, good shooting guards available. The great shooting guards are going to be available, but they're going to be matched. So what you're looking for is you're looking to overpay by maybe 10 to 20%. So somebody doesn't want to match or is willing to take whatever they can get in a sign and trade to get off the contract for a, you're going to pay A money to a B player. That's kind of what it is in RFA. Alternatively, they could go for an older player in unrestricted free agency, but that again runs the risk of misaligned timelines. If you pay for a guy who's over 30, they're in decline. And the question is, do you want to be building up? The one contract that I'm not 100% sure I like is the Danny Shea's contract. I know Danny is averaging 17 points and 9 rebounds for the team. The thing is, though, with Danny is if you take a look at his post-defense, it's a 77, which is, you know, a solid B, but it's not great. And I don't know that he brings enough other things to the table. Your rebound is already covered by Hakeem. You'd like to have him give you, you know, maybe some steals, maybe some blocks, maybe even a little bit of handles and passing. And that those low handles and passing, I think that's going to hurt a little bit, especially if they lose Macy with his 90 and 64. They're going to be more turnover prone. I like Danny Shea's, just I don't like him at $1 million a season. I really think, you know, that's a bit of an overpay for his skill set. But the thing with the Celtics is, much like the Knicks, they've only got their 88 first-round pick. So they're going to have a hard time accumulating more assets in any way other than trade, which I don't know that they're going to do, because really, you know, the only trades you could make at this point are either trying to flip Danny Shea's for something or sell off like a Dominique Wilkins for 3 or 4 good players, you know, try to break a superstar into 2 or 3 starters. And I don't know that the appetite is there for Dominique. Maybe it is, but I really don't think the appetite is there to move Dominique. We've seen there are a few owners, Darth being one of them, who are willing to trade a purple potential player. But most owner, or most GMs rather, once they get a purple potential player, will hang on to that player until their decline is such that they're no longer purple potential. So I suspect that's what we're going to see here out of Charlie. I think Neek and Hakeem are the core, probably with Terry Porter, for the next 3 to 4 years of Celtics basketball. And they're going to look to plug in on the wings around those guys. So we'll see how that goes. The last playoff team is the Nets. They've made a push. They're 7-3 over their last 10 games, while the Pacers are 1-9 to have fallen from, I think, about the 4th seed out of the playoffs. So the Nets made an interesting move in the offseason when they acquired Bill Cartwright. I mentioned this in a post on the Discord chat. Bill Cartwright just got passed this past sim, I believe it is, if it's not, it's the sim before, for most individual wins in the regular season in which he played. The winner, or the leader now, of course, is Magic Johnson, the every year MVP. But it's only by three games. I think Magic's at like 379 and Cartwright's at 376 or something like that. So Bill Cartwright is one of the most successful players in the history of the league. And they've got Cartwright in playing with Herb Williams as a backup. I think Herb has been used as their starter for several years. I think he was a little bit miscast as a starter. I think he's a B-minus starter and an A-plus backup. So I think having him as a backup now is terrific. It looks like they're using Clark Kellogg and Charles Oakley as their primary starters in the paint. And I think the two of them together with Cartwright are good. I like, you know, that both Kellogg and Oakley are still on their way up. Cartwright at 29 probably has a couple more seasons before his decline starts to become evident. And by that time, Oakley and Kellogg will have grown into being whatever it is they're going to be. They've got Eddie A. Johnson as the focal point of their offense. Dale Ellis is starting to light things up on the offensive end. Fat broken leg Lever is an interesting case study in that even though he has a couple of strong offensive ratings for scoring, an inside of 72 and a jump shot of 78, even a three-point shot of 63, he's only averaging 11.5 points per game. But that's because he's feeding Cartwright and Kellogg and Johnson and Ellis. As a fifth option, Fat Lever is probably the best fifth scoring option in the league. The one thing that I think is worrying to me about him is that field goal percentage. He's only shooting 424 for the season. I think if they could find some way to convince Fat to tone it down and maybe take one or two of those shots and try to turn them into assists, they'd have a chance to do even more than they already do. I've spoken before about my personal preference for guys that do something that their position normally doesn't do. And Fat is an amazing rebounder, especially on the offensive glass for a point guard. When your point guard is averaging 6.3 rebounds per game, that really gives you a boost. And you can see that reflected in where they come in the league rankings overall in offensive rebounds and offensive rebounding margin. They're number two in the league in offensive rebounds. They're number two in the league in offensive rebounding margin. And they're number five in the league overall in overall rebounding margin, most of which is coming from those offensive rebounds. So, you know, I think if I were trying to figure out where they are going in the offseason, the one thing that I think they could use a little bit of help with is this is a team that doesn't have a dominant defensive rebounder. Charles Oakley looks like he could grow into that. Clark Kellogg is pretty good. Bill Cartwright's pretty good for a big man. It's the Eddie Johnson and Dale Ellis defensive rebounding component that I think is a little bit lacking. The question is, are they ready to move off of either of those players? And the answer is probably we're going to find out in restricted free agency. And the other thing we're going to find out in the next couple of sims is how much over the cap are the Nets willing to go? And the reason I say that is their salary this season is already one of the highest in the league. They're paying a significant luxury tax bill. Everybody on the roster is under contract next year except for Dale Ellis, who's going to get a huge contract as part of RFA. And Bill Cartwright has a team option of about $1.1 million. If the team does not decline Cartwright's option by the end of the year, you know they're all in on next year and they're going to be facing a big luxury tax bill, or they're going to be forced to make a trade. Who do they trade? They probably have to trade either Cartwright or Herb Williams. If the team declines Cartwright's option, what that means is they're getting ready to put Herb Williams back at the starting center, or maybe try moving Oakley or Kellogg up there. They're comfortable with Duckworth as a backup. Basically, they think they've got their big man rotation figured out without Cartwright, and that makes it even more of an easy slam dunk decision to re-sign Ellis no matter what he wants in RFA. So again, if you watch over the next few sims, if Cartwright's option gets declined, you know for certain Ellis is coming back. If they don't decline Cartwright's team option, you might have a chance if you offer Ellis a max at getting him. I don't think RPF is letting him go, but you would have to at least think about it if you're staring down a $10 million salary structure, and that's going to put you in the repeater tax by a couple of million dollars. It's just something that, unfortunately, you have to worry about. So that concludes our look at the playoff teams. We're going to take a quick break, and then I'm going to come back, and I'm going to look at the not playoff teams.
And now it's time for your daily meditation with your host, Tim.
Hi. Today, let's imagine a warm, moist, tropical rainforest during a gentle rain. Let's relax and enjoy the sounds of the rainforest. Oh, look, there's a cute little monkey. Hi, monkey. And a trombone. Let's imagine we're walking along a winding path through the dense foliage. We're not in a hurry. We're just enjoying the sights, the sounds, the smells. Excuse me. We're just walking along without a care in the world, not concerned at all with the slippery mud underfoot.
Whoa!
Or the anvil overhead. Oh dear, looks like you need an ambulance. Hope it doesn't lose traction in the soft, brown mud. The accident seems to have frightened the monkey. And the trombone. And the drill press. And the flock of geese. And the class of second graders. And the monster truck.
Join us tomorrow for another daily meditation.
Hey, it's me. I just wanted to say hello.
Not another boring voicemail message.
Bye. Hold the phone! Before you delete that unwanted voicemail, think about those unfortunate people who never get any calls. Don't you think they'd want the message, even if you don't?
Gee, I guess so.
Then press 8 to donate. When you get a message you don't want, press 8. Your message will be forwarded to the mailbox of a fiber optic lonely heart.
Hey, this is Bill. I got your spreadsheet off the webpage, but I had some questions about the R&D headings. Give me a call.
Bill, I don't know what that meant, but you just made my day.
They may not understand the random messages they get, but they'll sure feel more connected. And isn't that what technology is all about?
You know, you're right. I'm going to press 8 to donate.
Hey, it's me. I just wanted to say hello. I hadn't talked to you in a while. Give me a call sometime. Bye.
I love you, random voice.
Press 8 to donate. Go ahead and touch someone with other people's fingers.
Right, we are back with the non-playoff teams in the East, and we're going to start right with the Pacers, who I alluded to a few minutes ago. The Pacers, to me, kind of looked like a team full of veterans that were making one last push until recently when the bottom kind of fell out. They've gone 1-9 in their last 10. Between Michael Thompson and George Gervin and John Lucas, this is a team that had some talent, but it's talent in its 30s. And we talked before about once guys hit 30, the perception is that they're sliding into irrelevance. And I think the Pacers' performance this season, starting strong and then fading, kind of encapsulates what most of us feel these players are doing at this point in their careers. The Pacers have a couple of solid future pieces, I think, in Jeff Malone and Jerome Kersey, and maybe Terry Teagle. Teagle is an interesting case because he's been kind of a microwave scorer off the bench. He's averaging 11 points a game in just 17 minutes. If you gave him starters minutes, which is, you know, about double that, could he average 20 a game? I don't know that he could. But the Pacers problems are really about offense. Jeff Malone and Jerome Kersey are both averaging 18.8, 17.8, and that's in about 30 minutes per game. So they're getting a lot of depth going. Again, if you were to extrapolate that out to starters' minutes, could both those guys pour in 20 points a game? Probably. The problem is that's about all that Jeff Malone does. I think Jerome Kersey has a little better future prospect. You know, he's averaging 7.6 rebounds per game. Part of that may come out of the fact that the Pacers just don't have a lot of other rebounders. They've got Michael Cage. And even though Manute Bol is 7'7", let's be honest, he's not performing to that with just 6 rebounds a game. The Pacers are the team that I look at and I think they're going to look radically different next season. Again, I think they keep Jeff Malone, they keep Jerome Kersey, they keep Michael Cage. All of these guys are on rookie deals. They probably keep Manute Bol again on a rookie deal. I cannot imagine them exercising the team option on Michael Thompson. I think they'll decline him to drop their committed salary for next season under $1 million. And this is the team, if you have a restricted free agent, to watch out for. They are going to be setting the market in restricted free agency. They're going to be the team that is trying to poach your guys in unrestricted free agency. The Pacers are the biggest wild card when we get to the offseason, and they don't have any, I think, particular player type that they're going to avoid. They're going to be looking for best player available regardless of position. I think Malone could probably play at small forward if he needed to. Jerome could play at power forward. They can move those two guys around. So if they see a wing that they like, they're going to go after him. They're going to want bigs. They're going to want a point guard. They're basically prepping for a reset this season. And they have both the Jazz and their own first-round picks this season, so they're going to have a couple of younger pieces on top of what they already have. So the Pacers' future, I think, depends very much on how they do in free agency. I mentioned before, generally I like their draft picks and their free agent pickups. It just hasn't worked out for Pauly yet, and I'm not 100% sure why. And again, that sometimes makes me doubt, do I know what I'm doing if I like his picks and nothing ever happens? But what he does have more than any other team in the league right now is he has flexibility. He has options. He can absorb large salaries in trade. He can spend large sums in free agency. He's got all of his draft picks, so look for a complete reset out of the Pacers. And I think, as usual, Pauly will be astute in what he does, and I fully expect them to be back in the playoff hunt next season. But I expect them to look completely different. A half game behind the Pacers is the Hawks. And I think the story for this season for the Hawks has been battling through lineup changes and injuries. Ron Harper, I don't know if he's ready for prime time yet. Derek Harper seems miscast at shooting guard. Charles Barkley, I know you like him at small forward, Ryan, but I think despite the height, he probably needs to play power forward and put Cliff Robinson back down to the small forward. And LaSall Thompson, as I mentioned elsewhere, the Hawks, I think, have a good young team on paper. They have a good core that's mostly in their early 20s. You know, Harper and Thompson are 25. The other Harper is 23. Cliff Robinson is 27. Barkley's 24. So this is a team where all of their core pieces are young and up and coming, with the possible exception of Louis Orr, who's 28. But, you know, he's in his prime, and he's not signed to a contract that is super stressful. So I think the important thing here is figuring out how to get their players in a rotation. I don't think I would be starting Darwin Cook at point guard as he is. I think you really need to give the keys over to the Harper boys and let Darwin be off the bench. Even though Darwin is a superior defender, The thing you have to do is you have to see what you have with your core and then figure out, do you want to move things around? I think, and this is just me personally, that one of the Harpers needs to be converted to a player that's a couple years older and a couple more years mature. I'm not sure which one that is at this point, although I'm leaning toward trying to move off of Ron since he's only averaging 9 points, 4 rebounds, and 3 assists, whereas Derek is only averaging 11 points, but he's also averaging 6.9 assists and 1.4 steals. Although Ron is averaging 1.7 steals, so maybe hang on to him. Like I said, I think you just need to get one of those guys out, probably packaged with either Darwin Cook or Louis Orr, to get a true superstar at shooting guard. And I think that will help significantly in terms of giving the Hawks an identity. They've got their main scoring threats in Barkley and Robinson, and that's fine. And I think, Darwin Cook is a good fit as a defender, such as he is, but he probably doesn't want to be the starter, probably shouldn't be the starter. I think you need a stronger starter. Ron Harper will eventually be that. I just don't know that he's on the same timeline as Cliff Robinson. It's a team that I feel has a very nice nucleus. I think it's a team that's a little bit scary / frustrating if I'm the GM, because Robinson has been paid, Thompson has been paid, Derek Harper is about to be paid, Darwin Cook's paid. So even though they nominally will have some cap space this offseason, it's going to be gone by the time free agency is over. They're going to have to pay Harper. And so then the question is, can they trade around the edges and improve what they've got without giving up a piece of their core? And I think the answer is no. I think one of the core pieces is going to have to go in order to, and you can package that piece with an Orr or with a Cook to get a super, superstar. And that, I think, is what will get the Hawks into the level that they would like to be at. It does help them that they have their own pick this season. That could be a way that they're able to get a piece that people want or to get a player. I do think this offseason is critical for the Hawks, though. If they cannot find a way to accumulate pieces this offseason that get them at least into the playoffs and show that this core has potential, I think it's going to be time to look at breaking up the core, just because you're going to be locked in salary-wise for several years to this core. And if they're not making the playoffs, that's a problem. And so I don't envy the position that Ryan is in. If you were to ask me what I think he should focus the most on, I would say right now, he's currently ranked third in the league overall in steals and third overall in steal differential. I think that's something that and rebounds that you can lean into. Look at generating more possessions than your opponents. Maybe bring the turnovers down a little bit, try to increase the steals, maybe work on the blocks. But, really defensive rebounding and steals is where I'd go for. And there's a lot of room for improvement on the defensive rebounding end, which surprises me a little bit given that LaSalle Thompson and Cliff Robinson and Barkley are all excellent rebounders. Again, this goes back to the Harpers. Ron Harper has a 16. Louis Orr has a 29. Derek Harper has a 23. Darwin Cook has a 27. I think one of your guards probably needs to have a 40-plus rating in defensive rebounding to help out there. So how do you do that? It's probably by looking around the league and seeing what you can get for Ron Harper, which is probably a lot. Ron Harper, I think, should be a valuable commodity. His salary is big enough where you can package it with, say, a Louis Orr, and you can get a quality player in return for that. So that would be my recommendation, and I think you probably want to try to do that before RFA when you have the most cap flexibility to move things around or to absorb salary coming back. Next up is the 76ers. Gary's going to run this league right into the ground, and he's kind of wasting a career year from Joe Barry Carroll. Part of that is due to injuries. Joe Barry Carroll's missed a dozen games due to injury, but when he's playing, he's averaging basically 26, 10, and 3 blocks. Those are prime Moses-type numbers. And so the question is, though, is JBC on the same timeline as the rest of the team? And the answer is no. Chris Mullen is 23. Joe Dumars is 23. Jay Humphries is 24. Sam Perkins is 25. Those are your future rotation players. Ricky Pierce at 27 is kind of a rotation player for now. John Sundvold, I guess, is 25. But, you know, Ricky Pierce can bridge that gap. But JBC at 28, he's starting to age out of the point where, you know, you can reliably use him. So I think the move here is to keep JBC and maybe try to see what you can get for a Ricky Pierce or a Joe Dumars or maybe a John Sundvold. One of your guys that is entering his prime but is not deep into his prime, and that lets you stay with your young guys. The one thing that I would be disappointed with if I was Gary is the development of Jay Humphries. He's got purple potential, but he's averaging 9.7 points per game. The recommendation for me here would be to get his inside potential or get his inside current trained up toward his potential. He's got to be, his current score is 38. If you dump 10 points of improvement into that every season, in about 3 seasons, he should be a monster. And you need to get him to be a monster quickly because, quite frankly, you're wasting JBC's prime. The other thing to be aware of with the 76ers is this is a team that is going to have to re-sign John Sundvold. So while it looks like they have cap space on paper, assuming that they want to bring Sundvold back, most of that cap space is going to be gone next season. So, you know, and then they have to look beyond that. They're going to have to re-up Sam Perkins. They're going to have to re-up Jay Humphries. And then after that, they got to re-up Dumars. They got to re-up Mullen. So the other priority that I think needs to be on Gary's list is moving either Jack Sikma or Ricky Pierce. You know, they have fairly large contracts. Sikma's 31. He's going to be hard to move. So I think the priority is going to be moving Ricky Pierce. If you can find a taker for Pierce at his contract number and at his age, I think it's probably a good thing because you have a lot of young players that you're going to have to pay. And by the time they're all paid and they're in their primes, Ricky's going to be out of his prime. And so you don't want his contract to be in the way. So that would be my advice for Gary. It's time to move on from Ricky Pierce. Also, do not trade your draft picks, at least not until you are established as a playoff team. Right now, that draft pick is going to the Kings. I know Chad will be annoyed at me for saying he shouldn't be giving draft picks to the Kings, but it's true. If you're not a playoff team, you should not be generally giving away draft picks. And so, you know, the Kings are going to have the 4 and 7 picks. That's going to, at least if things hold, that's going to help them rebuild quickly. The 76ers really probably would have liked to have had a young, cheap piece to add to their core with a lot of talent. They're not going to get it now. And so this is kind of advice not just for the 76ers, but for everyone in general. If your team is not a playoff team, be very wary of handing out your draft picks. We've seen for the most part. Now, I would say handing out your draft picks in advance. If you are going to make a draft day trade where you see what's on the board and you like something that somebody is offering you now better, that's a different thing entirely. But betting on yourself and betting on your team to do well should probably be reserved for those teams that have been in the playoffs the previous season, or, you know, were in the playoffs for 2 or 3 seasons, just missed it last year, and there's an explanation. For example, you had an injury that took a guy out for 3 months. And so you can say, you know, when this guy is back, I'm a playoff team. But I think the 76ers are going to continue to just kind of tread water. They're treading water below the surface, and that's a problem. Which brings us to The Bulls. The Bulls did a lot of selling off this season. They collected some pieces that I think are interesting long term. They've got a lot of guys that are young and have potential. They've got Scott Skiles. They've got John Konkak. They've got Roy Tarpley. They've got Gerald Wilkins. All of these guys are 23, or in Tarpley's case, 22, and are blue potential. So the Bulls have a bright future. They are force-feeding minutes to these guys for the most part, maybe not to Wilkins, but to everybody else. They're getting minutes. They're not producing yet. But I think this is letting the Bulls see where guys excel, where they can use things. And quite frankly, it lets them start figuring out what do we want to add around these guys. We know the Bulls were shopping Mo Cheeks pretty hard going into the trade deadline. They'll probably still be shopping him hard. He's got a contract that I'm sure they'd like to move off of. I just don't know that the demand is there for Mo Cheeks. I think if the demand was there, we would have seen it before the trade deadline. And again, he's got that magic three at the beginning of his age. And so I think that just tends to scare teams off. You have a big contract and you're over 30. It's hard to move those. Not impossible, but it's hard. One thing I do like for the Bulls as they go forward is, even with that Maurice Cheeks contract, Michael Ray Richardson's contract is expiring, and they've got no other, I would call them, egregious contracts. Sly Williams has a contract that maybe is more than you'd like, but he's going to be expiring after next season. Craig Hodges just had to be upped in RFA, so you understand why he's getting paid. But the Bulls, particularly if they can find a taker for Cheeks, are another of those teams that are going to be with the Pacers in terms of defining the contours of how guys get paid this offseason. The Bulls are a team that you need to be worried about coming after your free agents, be they restricted or unrestricted. And if I'm being honest, I think if I've got a restricted free agent who's up, I'm hoping that the Bulls sign him rather than the Pacers, because I think the Bulls have more interesting pieces that they can offer in return. And so you might be able to get something back from them. But the Bulls are in the middle of a teardown, which, you know, I think it's pretty obvious. They've got 5 first-round picks over the next 3 years. They have the Nuggets pick. They have their own pick. They have the Hawks pick in 89. So This is a team where the direction is clear. They're going to be rebuilding. They're going to be rebuilding young. They're going to be coming after your guys in free agency. And the way the roster looks now is not the way the roster is going to look in 2 years. All of their young players that will still be around will have gotten a lot better, and they have a lot of flexibility to add. So where do I see the Bulls going? I think the Bulls are going into the offseason looking for a lot of changes to come their way. And that finally brings us to the Bullets, who, oh my goodness, they seem to be involved in like 8 million trades this season. They flushed their roster twice over. Basically, the only thing that you can say for sure is going to be consistent with the Bullets is Sleepy Floyd is going to be here next year. yes, he was a restricted free agent, so that kept him from being moved, but also, he is now their future, and it's on his timeline that they're going to be building around. And I really like the fact that they've got a lot of young players on rookie deals or guys on expiring deals. What it means is they are going to be another one of those teams that defines free agency. They're going to be the team that is looking to poach your players. They're going to be the team that is able to swing for big trades by absorbing big salaries. And they have shown in the past that they are able to build a winner. And they've shown this year that they are flexible with trades, they're inventive with trades, and that they've got a lot of things that they're looking to bank on. Looking at their roster now, whom other than Sleepy Floyd should they be building around in the future? I thought the Mike Mitchell pickup was a very interesting pickup. Mitchell is 31. He's no longer blue. He was still performing at a high level, but he's an expiring contract. And so is he a guy that is in the Bullets' long-term plans? I think the answer is no. I think the Bullets' big value in that trade was flexibility and picks, especially. Or points, excuse me, especially. They've got Hot Rod Williams, whom they have played not at all this season. If I were them, I would like to roll out Hot Rod just to see what he can do, because that may help me figure out what I'm going to do when it comes to the draft. The other guy that I think they should probably be giving minutes to at this point is John Sally. Again, mostly to see, does John Sally have a future with this franchise? I think they've already given Blair Rasmussen a good hard look. I think they have enough data to know what he is. He's a little bit foul prone. He's a, I would call him a C minus big. He can take minutes, but he's not great. And so I think you need to find out, can Hot Rod Williams play that spot? Can John Sally play that spot? Those are two of your guys that are under contract as rookies that you need to find out now, are these your building blocks? And they're both under contract for 4 years, so it's okay to give them some run now. Nobody's coming to give them big paychecks until 1990, so you know, you're fine there. The other guy that I think could be a potential building block, and this is another guy that's on a four-year rookie deal with them, is Buck Johnson. Now, Buck has gotten a tiny bit of playing time this season. We've seen him in 14 games. He still feels very raw. I don't know that he's a player that you want to build around long term, but I think as long as you're not looking for scoring, you know, he might be a stopgap, but I don't think Buck Johnson's it, quite honestly. He's very foul prone. He doesn't have any attribute where he really excels. So, Buck is the kind of player that maybe you want to look at, but I think you probably kind of already know what he is and who he is, and you let it go and you try to get something else. So the Bullets have the Knicks pick this year. They have their own pick. They have a bunch of second-round picks and, again, lots of cap space. So this, like the Bulls, is a team that I think is going to look a lot different next season. They'll look even more different two seasons from now. It's a team in flux. It's a team that decided to tear down to the studs and is getting ready to come back together. And quite frankly, has done a masterful job, in my opinion, of accumulating distressed assets and turning them into future assets, mostly in the form of points. But, you know, when I'm looking here at the Bullets, you know, again, I don't see any player that I think, oh my gosh, that guy is overpaid. All of their players that are under contract going forward, except for Sleepy, who's on a very team-friendly deal with no raises, are on rookie scale contracts. So it's a team that has the depth already built in to improve. It's a team that will be getting their own draft pick, and going back to that, you know, we probably could have seen the teardown coming as soon as they traded to get their own draft pick back. And this kind of goes back to the comment that I made with the 76ers and Gary. Generally, if you're not a lottery team, or if you are a lottery team, you should not be trading away your draft pick. You should only trade away your draft pick if you're a playoff team. The caveat to that is if you decide that your playoff team isn't good enough and you've traded away future draft picks, you probably need to first trade to get those back before you start a teardown. And so that's something, you know, just to be aware of. Again, it's general GM advice, and you haven't just heard it from me. You've heard it from Darth. You've heard it from Doug. These are mistakes that can be costly as a GM that generally I try to steer new GMs away from, is before you make a trade where you're sending out draft picks, give it a season or two, see how your team's doing, see where you're going, then make the decision on what timeline do I think I can rebuild, and send draft picks away accordingly. You may notice that the Trailblazers have traded their first round pick a couple of times. I traded my first round draft pick for the very first draft just before the trade deadline in response to an injury to Bill Cartwright, or in response to an injury to James Donaldson. I swapped him for Bill Cartwright because I knew I was a top three playoff seed. That draft pick wasn't going to be good, especially if I could get Donaldson in to plug the gap for Cartwright. Or Cartwright in to plug the gap for Donaldson. Sorry about that. The other time I traded my draft pick was this season when I felt pretty confident, and I traded it again right at the trade deadline, when I felt pretty confident that I'm not trading away a draft piece that's going to be significant. It's going to be toward the end of the first round. Still could jump a few spots, but you know, I don't think I'm trading away a lottery pick is the short version there. I think I'm pretty good. And other than that, even in years where I think my team has been good, I've been hesitant to trade away future lottery picks because one injury or, you know, one change of fortune can change the way your team is going, and you always want to be able to react. So generally, I'm very conservative with trading away my own picks. You can probably tell that by my draft movies. Even though I'm generally willing to consider trades, I don't like moving off of my own picks in the future because I like having the flexibility, should I need to pivot to a tear down to the studs and rebuild. I haven't had to do that yet in this league. I did it in the old league. It's coming at some point. You know, I'm trying to revolve pieces and do a ship of Theseus, but I know at some point I'm not going to be able to do that. And so, you know, this is, I guess, just one piece of GMing advice. And the bullets are an example of how to do it. If you're going to tear it down, make sure you get your own draft picks back. And the 76ers, unfortunately, are an example of how not to do it. And that is trading away high draft picks. Yes, for talented players, but you could probably do better in the draft than you got in the trade. So that'll wrap it up for this episode of Chat with a Cat. We'll see how things go. Maybe we'll get a playoff preview in. Trying to get back in the saddle and do these more regularly. So thanks for listening, and we'll see you on the next one.